21. As we walked back to camp with the spoils of our hunt safely packed away in my inventory, the sun got lower, causing the greenish cast to the light to intensify. At the same time, with every step closer that we got to camp, the unsettling feeling I'd had before started to build again. The weird thing was, I realized that the sense of being observed by an unknown presence didn't bother me. It just didn't feel malevolent, or something about it was familiar, though I couldn't figure out why. No. What bothered me was, well, that it didn't bother me. The logical part of my brain was telling me that whatever it was could be casting a spell to lull me into a false sense of safety, and I should be on my guard against Thera, or the villagers, or some forest monster. Maybe those lizard people Khanil had told me about had shamans, and one of them was messing with me. So, yeah, I was freaking out because I wasn't freaking out. And when the foghorn tuba blatted as we got close to the village, I just about jumped out of my skin. Fortunately, Thera was ahead of me and didn't see. When we walked through the gate and it swung closed behind me, part of me was sure it was a trap. But the suspicious part was drowned out by the feeling that I'd come home. A teenage boy approached Thera. She handed him her gore-crusted club without a word, and then she started walking toward a hut set off by itself at the edge of the main village. Once she'd gone, all eyes were on me. And there was a long, awkward silence as everyone tried to hide their disappointment. One of the guards cleared her throat and said sympathetically, "So, the hunt was not successful." That's when I pulled the first, smallest Trudon out of my inventory in a neat stack of haunches and ribs with the head balanced on top. Before they had stopped boggling at a dinosaur appearing out of thin air, I pulled out a couple of Lego Hadrosaur. Then, a second Trudon, followed by various cuts of Hadrosaur meat, and more Trudon, and more Hadrosaur, piece after piece after piece. It took a good 5 minutes to bring everything out, while my audience went from whispers of amazement at my little magic trick to raucous cheers. Everyone grabbed what they could carry and headed toward the village square. As we passed the storehouse I'd been in with Denno earlier in the day, he came out the door with two other guys, each carrying an armload of stuff. Two paces behind them were Queenie and Scout, also loaded down with an assortment of fruits and leaf-wrapped parcels. "Queenie," I eyed her suspiciously, "you stayed away from the Tan, right?"
"Of course, Master,"
she replied with a bewildered look.
"You commanded me to not have another Tan, and I would never disobey my master."
Relieved, I said, "I should know I can always count on you." She flushed and smiled at me in her adoring way.
"Your trust in me gives me more pleasure than 8 Tan fruits," she swallowed. "Perhaps even 9.
I might have teased her a bit about that, but we'd fallen behind the rest of the troop, and Denno bellowed out, "Come on, you lollygaggers!" Even though I wasn't carrying Jack, I fell in line next to Queenie. After everyone had left their cargo in the village square, she and I slipped away to an area that my auric sense told me was deserted. "So," I asked quietly, "did you find anything I should know about?" Queenie shook her head regretfully.
I failed to find an explanation for your troubling feeling, and the villagers did not give me the impression that they were hiding anything. She frowned, as if she was confused. They do not seem afraid of me, and they were nice to me.
Is that so? I laughed gently. Maybe they just think you're cool.
The children were playing a game involving kicking a ball, and they asked me to play with them.
She mimicked the motion with her foot. Well, did you? I asked curiously.
I did, she nodded.
Did you have fun? I asked. She frowned again.
I'm not sure. I did not know what I was doing. They explained the rules, but I think I kicked the ball in the wrong direction. They didn't seem to mind, though. It was all very strange.
She shook her head to clear it.
I did not play for long, Master, and Scout was exploring while I was with the children.
I hid my smile. I approve of your course of action, Queenie. She flushed and ducked her head.
I only wish I'd been successful in finding the source of my master's distress.
I tried to sound unconcerned as I replied, Oh, it's probably all in my head anyway. I waved my arm toward the gate where people were still ferrying dinosaur chunks to the feast area. Let's go help clean up the mess I made.
It is an impressive mess indeed,
Queenie commented, as we made our way toward the pile. We each grabbed an armload and started walking toward the feast area.
It must have been quite fun to have spent the day hunting with Thera.
Well, the hunting part was cool, and I guess she doesn't actively hate my guts now that I've proven useful. Queenie laughed, which was rare for her. What's so funny?
I'm sorry, Master. I thought you were making a joke.
She smiled bashfully. I guess it is funny in a pathetic kind of way. I shrugged and sighed. I've gotten too used to hot chicks throwing themselves adoringly at me, and now I'm getting some comeuppance.
I am confused, Master.
She looked at me for a long moment.
Are you truly under the impression that Thera does not care for you?
Yeah. We'd reached the feast area, and I looked for an empty spot and set my cargo down. It's pretty obvious. Queenie gave me a worried look.
The unknown presence you feel is clearly preventing you from smelling Thera's pheromones.
Humans don't really, smell pheromones. I shrugged.
Then how do you tell when someone wants to mate with you?
She looked horrified at the prospect. It's more about how they act towards you. I waved a hand dismissively. You know.
That seems terrible.
Queenie swallowed hard.
But people's actions can be deceiving.
True, but you learn to look for subtle... I paused as her words finally registered. Wait, what are Thera's pheromones telling you?
That she wants to mate with you, of course,
Queenie replied matter-of-factly. Are we talking, I must have him tonight, or just, he'll do in a pinch? I inquired.
I had anticipated that you would have mated before returning from the hunt.
She shrugged. Oh. I didn't know what else to say to that. I was contemplating whether or not there might be a subtle skill of aura examine that would let me, say, pick willing partners out of a crowded bar, and if so, what level I needed to reach to unlock that fucking gold mine. When I saw Thera herself walking toward us.
Her feathers were now clean and slightly damp, hiding even less of her toned curves than they had before. Unfortunately, there were a half dozen other people with her, so I figured this wasn't the time to test Queenie's theory.
"Garrett, my friend,"
Denno exclaimed as he broke from the group and strode up to me.
"Us bigwigs thought we'd show you the sights before we chow down."
The gate was their pride and joy, designed by Thera's great-grandmother, the same one who had created her club. "We shared the original plans with our allied clans, and now there are gates like this protecting every village in the forest," Suli, the other woman in the group besides Thera, noted. "How many other villages are there?" I inquired.
"Let's see,"
Suli started counting on her fingers.
"For blues," Suli started counting on her fingers. "For blues, there are Mock Hills Village, Durons, Boozars, then the two turquoise. They just have councils instead of leaders. Makes it confusing to keep them straight."
"There are three turquoise villages now," Jorna, the tall, muscular guy who was supposed to have gone hunting with Thera today, interrupted. "The southern village has grown too large to fit comfortably in one settlement."
"Oh dear," Suli murmured. "Now, I'll never be able to keep track. Well, no worries. Khanil has it all written down in his scrolls."
She lowered her voice to add,
"Even the Orange Clan."
An uneasy hush fell heavily over the group. I broke the silence by asking the obvious.
"So the orange guys aren't allies, huh?"
Denno spat on the ground.
"They're worse than the Saurians. Mark my words, one day the gods will strip them of their feathers and cast them into the desert with the other vermin. They have the entire ocean to themselves," Jorna growled. "And yet, they covet our land, too."
"They don't care about the land. They covet our trees," Thera added. And then she saw my confusion. "They have cut down the ones near the ocean to build their boats, so now they have turned their greedy eyes inland."
"How the hell big is this clan that they need the whole fucking forest?" I asked, as I mentally made a note to have Queenie do a flyover later.
"Exactly,"
Denno snapped as he smacked his open palm with his fist.
"They are never satisfied, and they always have a justification. Many years ago, when they first began seafaring, they said they only needed the tallest and straightest of the gnarl pine. They were our brothers back then, so of course, we allowed it. Then, they needed a few sun palms because those were best for the hulls. We agreed. Now, their villages were growing, and they needed more food, more wood for more huts, more space to put the huts, huge expanses. 10 times the size of this village, a new one every year. So we put our foot down, and they declared war."
He spat again.
"From brothers to enemies overnight."
I pictured the land as Queenie had described it after her aerial survey.
"So, the orange assholes are to the northeast, and the Saurians are southwest, and here you are stuck in the middle."
Jorna grunted assent.
"That sums it up."
"Well, that sucks.
I'm Mr. Eloquent sometimes. What can I say?"
"Okay, what about the Saurians? I take it they were never your brothers in, not arms."
"The scrolls tell of a time long ago," Thera recounted, "when the Saurians were a clan like any other. But they angered the gods,
who took their feathers and their humanity before casting them out of the forest to the barren. They envy us greatly and raid our settlements, burning all that they cannot steal. It was weird how that was almost word for word what Kanil had said this morning. What did they do to piss off the gods?
They disrespected them, Jorna said.
Okay, but how exactly?
I looked around the group.
Like, did they desecrate an altar or refuse to give an offering or what?
There was a long silence before Suli replied.
The scrolls do not say.
You'd think the people who wrote stuff down about the punishment would have mentioned the crime.
I sighed.
I mean, otherwise, how do you guys know what to not do to keep from joining them in the Baron?
The silence returned, and this time nobody had an answer. I got the distinct feeling that none of them had even really thought about it, and now that I'd put the question in their heads, they were worried that, yeah, how do we know we aren't fucking something up? I really wanted to know the whole story behind the Saurian's fall from grace or whatever it was, but this wasn't the time, or the place, or the people to find out about it. Instead, I decided I'd ask Kanil about it when I saw him. He seemed like the kind of guy who, even if he hadn't read anything in his scrolls, would have at least pondered the question. I tried to lighten the mood I'd caused by saying, "Well, hey, if you haven't hit the god's sore spot in the last umpteen generations, you must be doing okay." Denno, clearly relieved at a chance to lighten the mood, nodded emphatically.
"There you go. Tan's cool with the gods. Bashing Saurians is cool with the gods. We're cool with the gods."
He paused and sniffed the air.
"But somebody's burning the Hadrosaur tongue, and that is not cool with the gods."
He jogged toward the feast area faster than I'd seen him move since I met him out in the forest.
"Meltono, what are you doing?"
"He's not wrong." Thera shook her head and smiled fondly after him. And I thought I saw a little dimple under the soft down of her cheek. "And if Meltono's burning the tongue, that means the feast is nearly ready. We can continue our weighty discussions tomorrow. Now, it is time to fill our bellies and sing."
I gladly followed them toward the village square, which was now a mouth-watering swirl of smells. Like a 4th of July barbecue times 30. Grilled meat. Plus a scent like authentic minestrone soup, but earthier. Something else that reminded me of falafel with plenty of cumin, pineapple upside-down cake, and the unmistakable aroma of alcohol, of course. On the edge of the square, a group of little kids sat cross-legged in a half-circle around Scout, feeding him bits of who knows what, giggling as the ants' mandibles brushed their palms. Apparently, it wasn't just Queenie they'd taken a fancy to. Speaking of which, I looked around for her and finally spotted her on the far side of the square, bent over a circle of hot coals with pieces of meat on top of a bed of leaves on top of the coals. Her head was tilted as she listened intently to a middle-aged woman next to her who was simultaneously giving Queenie instructions while also stirring the contents of a huge stone bowl over a different set of coals. Suli led me to a high table with stacks of what I first thought were just palm leaves. When I picked one up, though, it was actually 3 or 4 leaves, glued together with the veins running in different directions, with a thin, hard, brownish coating like varnish. These plate bowls were about 15 inches in diameter, The rims had been carefully scalloped, with tiny holes punched along the very edges. Clearly, they'd brought out the good china for their guests. There were also mugs similar to Conil's canister, but without the lids. I had noticed that the long, low tables where we would eat already had mugs set out. So I figured those were for drinks and the ones in front of me were for something soup-like. The only utensils were basically sticks with a bit of a paddle at the end, but a lack of silverware wasn't unusual in the game worlds I'd visited when I was playing Terraforma, so it wasn't surprising here. I took a plate, a mug, and a stirrer, and followed Suli as she snaked her way through the various cooking stations. In addition to the meat, which was obviously, well, meat, there were a dozen plant-based foods, and since I didn't have any idea what any of them were, I took one of everything. I couldn't just snub any of the cooks, could I? That wouldn't be polite. Fortunately, most of the non-meat stuff was fairly small, so I had room on my plate for a Troodon wing and three different small cuts of Hadrosaur, including a sliver of the tongue, because burned or not, I have a thing for organ meats. Of course, one of the other Hadrosaur pieces had to be from Queenie Station. Frankly, I was nervous, mainly because if it was awful, she would be so disappointed in herself, and I didn't want to do that to her. After I'd gotten my food, Denno waved me over to sit next to him, but for once, he wasn't very talkative, since his mouth was busy with his plate of vittles. So I dug into my own heaping plate. Even though I could see Queenie at her cooking station, and she was about ready to burst with impatience, I started with the Troodon. I wasn't surprised that it tasted like alligator, since they are both carnivorous, cantankerous reptiles. Next, I sampled a square of greenish-brown paste that had been served on a small vine leaf. I expected something like avocado just because it looked like that. I should have been thinking of fucking wasabi, though. And even though I'd barely nibbled it, my eyes started watering. Denno chuckled around a mouthful of food and motioned with his mug of magenta-colored stew and stirring stick, and I realized I was supposed to add it to other stuff. Since I had a decent amount of it already burning my entire tongue, I took a mouthful of stew and swished it around. I didn't taste much of anything at first except jungle wasabi, but slowly, I could detect the flavors in the stew. It was more like a strawberry banana smoothie than anything else I could think of. I made a note that if I ever completed my Save the Universe mission and got back to Earth, to order my smoothies with wasabi, because somehow it worked for me. The non-Queenie Hadrosaur was, well, I almost said, tastes like chicken, out loud. Except then, I would have had to explain what a chicken was to my new feather-covered friends. Denno would have thought it was hilarious, but I wasn't ready to go there with the rest of the village. Then again, the Troodons had feathers. Maybe tomorrow I'd try my comedy stylings. The tongue was a little more bitter than other organ meats I'd had, but not in a bad way. Now, I knew that it was time to try Queenie's Hadrosaur. Against my better judgment, I bit off a big, hearty chunk because I didn't want her to see me hesitate, and I figured I could fake a smile better around a whole mouthful of food. Wow. It was seared perfectly, not burned. It must have been marinated in a vinegary sauce. A little hot kick, not the green paste, but something mellower. This was where the cumin-like aroma had been coming from, and maybe a hint of pixie sticks, just enough of the various flavors. Yeah, I didn't have to force a smile. I polished off the other two bites and got up for seconds before everyone else beat me to it. Queenie was already blushing with joy before I said, "My compliments to the chef."
"I just did what Leanie told me to do."
She gestured toward the woman behind her. "Well, Leanie's an excellent teacher," I declared. The woman didn't fully turn around from her shallow cauldron, but she flashed me a smile. "Have you tried it yourself, Queenie?"
"I have. I might have added extra steen sugar to mine."
She blushed.
"But I knew you are not as fond of sweet things as I am, so I didn't add it to the rest of the pieces."
I laughed. "No one is as fond of sweet things as you, Queenie." I didn't object when she gave me a double helping, and I went back to my seat to stuff my face some more. After everyone had eaten their fill, the entire tribe pitched in to wrap the leftovers in leaves and bring them to the one hut in the village made of stone instead of wood and thatch. This was their smokehouse. Several young men gathered the hot coals from the cooking stations that had been used for the feast and added them to the pit in the center, along with some new wood. Then it was time for the singing Thera had promised. War songs about fighting the Saurians, with emphasis on their foul odor. War songs about fighting the Orange Clan, with emphasis on the small size of the men's penises and the women's boobs. A love song, sung beautifully and wistfully by Denno of all people, about a goddess who I think was also a tree, and maybe the moon too. Or maybe she was a tree and died and became the moon. I might have been able to follow it better, but I'd had a few mugs of ale that I was pretty sure was made from the pixie stick sugar I tasted in Queenie's Hadrosaur. As contented, sleepy villagers made their way back to their huts after the last song, and I was wondering where exactly I was supposed to sleep, Thera approached. I thought about what Queenie had said about pheromones and shit, but I didn't want to get my hopes up. Thera stood wordlessly in front of me, gazing at my face without quite looking me in the eye. She reached a downy hand out toward mine and just said, "Yes?" I took her hand. Her fingers felt surprisingly delicate, intertwined with my own. "Yes," I replied. "Very much, yes."